It's time for some sound advice, courtesy of our gadget detective. So if you have a problem with the gadgets in your life, he is the man to call. The number 03 459 57 0057. Fevzy, let's start then with your gadget of the week. What have you got for us today?
Okay, so I have a penchant, you may know, for synthesizers, these big electronic beasts that started to come into existence in the 70s and 80s, and we still hear them on all sorts of music, including the one that you just heard there. Now, in the past, if you wanted one of these sort of classic synthesizers that had that sort of big, fat, brassy, synthetic sound, you'd pretty much have to go to eBay and pay a shed load of money, and by that I mean thousands of pounds, for some of the rarer bits of kit. One of the companies that was instrumental in inventing modern synthesizers was a company called Moog, by a guy called Robert Moog, who's held to be the father of modern synthesis. And he produced a synthesizer called the Moog Model 15. And if you buy it in hardware form, a new one, is $10,000. Which is,
wow,
is a bit rich. Yeah, and it's what's called a modular synth, because all these different boxes that make different parts of the sound, the wave generator, the envelopes, the filters, all the things that you would then patch it together using these cords, you know, like the old telephone switchboards. And this was very, very flexible, but very expensive. Yeah. So what they've done is they've produced it in software form to run either on an iPad or even on a modern iPhone.
Ah, clever.
And so instead of $10,000, it's £22.99.
That's more like
that's
it.
That's more like it. Would I bring to you a $10,000 gadget?
Say.
Which, by the way, is very nearly £10,000 now, which is the bad news. Yeah. So I've got it running on a phone in my hand. It's running on an iPhone 7 Plus. It's not hooked up to any external speakers or anything. But I'm going to just give
I'm going to give you a
blast, and you'll forgive me my inabilities. But I just want to give you an idea of some of the sounds.
Okay. Oh. Very 80s.
Yeah, or...
Oh, nice.
Or, one of my favourites is something called Cats on Bikes.
Oh.
You see? And that would be like little puss just...
Gosh, I tell you what, we all want to come to a party at Fevzy's house. No. So we're you on your synth. What a night that would be.
I know, but look, at least you can plug headphones in.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic thing, because it not only does it make great sounds, and it gives you, even on a tiny little phone, you can sort of pan around and see where you'd plug in all the wires to connect it all up. But if you're not into all of that, it's got 160 built-in sounds that are classics. You can play it from either the tiny built-in keyboard on the iPhone or iPad, or you can plug in a larger keyboard into it. You can even play it using what's called a ribbon controller, where you sort of slide your finger up and down. I'm sorry, I'm just rather excited about this.
$22.99.
If you want to know more information about this and other apps, it's Moog Music, moogmusic.com.
Out of interest, how much time have you spent on that particular app, Fevzy?
I have to know about it.
Yeah, of course. It's all for research.
Look, there's 160 apps, and someone has 160 presets, and someone has to go through them all.
Of course.
Otherwise,
yes.
How could I say to you in good faith there are 160 of them, Alison?
You're so thorough. That's why we love you. Fevzy is here for the next 20 minutes. If you have a gadget question for him, do get in touch. The number 03 459 57 0057. If you're having problems with your email, issues with your smartphone, problems connecting to the internet, whatever it is that's troubling you, get in touch. The number 03 459 57 0057, or you can text 81333. Start your message with the word radio. It's 2:15. Here's Frida Payne. Frida Payne and Band of Gold. We're talking gadgets with our gadget detective Fevzy this afternoon. He's on hand to offer you free technical advice. Do get in touch. The number 03 459 57 0057. This question in from Funky J. He says, when I go to put my password in on my desktop computer, the bar already has dots in it as if a password has been attempted. I have to clear about 40 dots from the bar before I put my password in. Clear as mud, I know, but any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So, thank you, Jay, and I just love the name anyway. What's happening is that something that previously recorded what it thinks should go in that field is then attempting to do you the convenience of filling it in for you. Now, there are separate programs that do this, but also web browsers do it. So, you know, if you're running Firefox or Android or Explorer or Safari, they all have the capability of remembering passwords when you enter it the first time and then reproducing it for you. Now, I personally never use those particular services because I don't think they are sufficiently secure. In terms of what's happening in this particular field, if it's so many characters and you didn't enter a password that's so many characters, probably what happened is, you know, something rested on your keyboard and the auto repeat just blasted a whole bunch of characters in there. That could easily be it. What you need to do is click in that field, highlight it all by, if you're using a Windows machine, Control A will highlight it all, then hit the delete key so you'll have a completely empty field in which to enter, and then you enter the correct password. And you might find that if it is using that sort of software built into the browser, it may just say to you, do you want me to remember this password? But my advice to you is, don't let that sort of software remember your passwords. If you want to use that sort of software, there are dedicated applications such as LastPass or 1Password that will do that more securely than the browser, which does it as an add-on feature.
Okay, that's worth bearing in mind. Keith has given us a call from Hove. You've got a question with regards to software, Keith.
Yes, it's some ancient software. It's the old IBM Smart Suite.
Okay.
How can I import a spreadsheet into something like Excel or OpenOffice or something?
Right. Well, if there's no... Hello, Keith. If there's no specific import facility for Smart Suite's format. So the idea is that all of these applications will store their data in a proprietary way, and typically in a non-standard way. If it doesn't support import from Smart Suite directly, and some of them may, even though it's very old, you can get it in through something which is called a comma-separated file. Or CSF, and what that means is it will forget about all the niceties of how it looked and just bring out the raw data one bit at a time with a comma in between each bit. And even modern software will be able to read comma separated files or comma separated values, CSF or CSV.
How can I make a CSF or CSV in Smart Suite?
Again, most when you do a sort of save as type thing, most of them will give you that capability to output it in that really basic form.
Yeah.
So that will only be the only way. You need to go for a non-proprietary format such as CSV, and typically even old software will give you the ability to save it in that format, or in another format. It may call it ASCII or something like that.
Let's go back to our gadget detective now. Fevzi is on hand to answer your technological queries. And actually, I've got a question for you. Something that I'm very interested in actually at the moment, because recently my cards got cloned, Fevzi. And I was reading about this new credit card with a digital display that will actually randomly generate a security code as a way of combating fraud.
Yeah, so this is a credit card designed to help, as you say, combat fraud. And you're not alone, by the way. Last year, there were over 20,000 victims in this country of credit card fraud. And the fraud totaled £755 million that we know about.
How did they do it, though? I'll tell you what happened with me. So it was flagged up by my bank. Well, one of the cards was flagged up because somebody tried to buy £30 worth of groceries and then get £50 cash back at a supermarket. That was stopped, that transaction. But another transaction on a different card did go through, but they didn't actually even have to put a PIN in. It was just swiped. The card was just swiped, and they let them have it.
Yeah, and often that's the case. Often you find that it's not actually necessary to enter a PIN. Certainly, if you think about online transactions, you're not entering a PIN there.
No.
And sometimes they just mark it as cardholder not present, and then PIN is not required, and it's a workaround that some retailers use for sort of convenience. And of course, that situation has become a little bit worse now with contactless cards,
sure.
where up to about £30 or so, depending on the card, you can just make a series of £30 transactions without any need for any sort of PIN. So this particular card, it's from a company that's selling it first into France, although they're talking to UK banks as well. So in France, this will be in place by the end of the year, and I hope here's to not too much longer. So, you know, on the back, when you're asked for your security number, and they ask for typically the last three digits, unless it's an Amex card, in which case it's the last four. And that's always the same. It's a printed on the back of the card, which means that I'm always a bit nervous about giving that to people, particularly over the phone, because, you know, you have to get their assurance and trust them that they will destroy that, because, you know, the information you give them combined with that is enough to take money from the card.
Yeah.
So what's happening with this new card is, on the back where it would be printed, there's a tiny little LCD screen, you know, just like a little calculator display, which will change the PIN number automatically every hour.
Oh.
Which you have to make sure, I guess, that your telephone transaction doesn't take too long, because it might change between
midway.
You know, there will be just that unlucky moment between when you give it and when they put the transaction through, and it won't match because it's changed. But I don't know how they'll overcome that. But it's a great idea, because it means that, you know, every hour you've got a different security number, and it works from a little battery that's built in, sliver of a lithium ion battery that's built into it, that will go for about 3 years, which is, I think, longer than most credit cards are valid for.
Yeah, what
anyway,
a good idea, though. But that's what they've got to do now. They've got to keep one step ahead of these fraudsters.
And that's exactly what it is, one step ahead. This is not a long-term solution. This is cat and mouse, one leapfrogging the other, to mix one's metaphors. But, you know, it's never going to be a final solution. There'll always be a way to defraud people of money, but this will just make it harder, and then they'll have to up their game, as it were.
One final question from Lloyd. He wants to know how he can get iTunes off one laptop to another.
Okay, so you can. There's two things here, isn't there? There's the application, the software itself, and then there are all your music and other files that you may have downloaded or managed on your system with iTunes. In terms of the software itself, obviously simple, you just download iTunes onto the new machine. I'm guessing what Lloyd is getting at is the content. There are various ways of doing this. What you can do is, in the iTunes that you're using, look to see where the iTunes folder is and just copy it across en masse, the folder and the subfolders, okay? And you'll know it, because one, it'll be called iTunes, but also it'll be a very big folder, assuming you've got a fair amount of music or maybe film clips and other things in there. And you can literally just copy it across and make sure that when you do so, that on the new iTunes, it knows where the folder is, so that there are settings within iTunes where you can either leave it to default, and if it's default, then it's no problem. But if for some reason it's stored on a different drive or in a different folder, you just need to make sure that when you copy it across, the new iTunes knows where to look for that folder and the files within it.
I hope that helps you, Lloyd. Fevzi, as always, thank you so much for that. If people want to get free advice from you, they can follow you on Twitter, can't they?
They can. Come and say hello on Twitter at Gadget Detective, or on the website, which is www.gadgetdetective.com.
And you can also listen to the Tech Phone-In at your convenience via the BBC's Let's Talk About Tech podcast. You can even go back and listen to Tech Phone-Ins from earlier weeks. Fevzi, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Speak soon.